Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome again to another episode of Talk Straight. It's the host and producer, yours truly, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, grateful again to be here. And we're broadcasting live from the Edmondson Library in South Nashville. Why are we doing that? Because, as you know, this year we began locally in Nashville, Davidson County, to promote an educational lecture series that was specifically about parent choice. Parent choice. Empowering parents to understand better how they can become partners in education and to make the best decisions for their children. So in January, we were in North Nashville. February, we're here in South Nashville. We're scheduled to be East Nashville starting in March, the second week in March. But nonetheless, this has been Black History Month. We've strived to offer some Black history information. And I agree with some of our previous callers that African American history is a day-to-day process. It's something that should be celebrated, should be encouraged, maintained every day, as we do American history. In fact, African American history cannot be told, or I should say American history, cannot be told properly and adequately without the contribution of African Americans. We do have a topic of discussion tonight. And what I'm going to do is, in the last 30 minutes, I'm going to discuss some myths around the school choice option or the educational savings account that we've been sharing with you. In addition to that, I'll talk more about some other options parents have. The window has closed to choose metro schools, so now there are other options for you. We're going to talk about those, but first we'll give our historical spotlight for tonight. The number to call is here in the studio tonight is 657-383-09. Again, that number is 657-383-09. Welcome you to give us a call. Those that are on Facebook, feel free to post your questions and or comments and be a part of this dialogue. We'll be checking our Facebook feed just to see where you are, and if you have a commentary or question, we'll be happy to respond accordingly. All right? Having said all of that, Pastor Wallace, should I expect him to be on with us a little later if he's able to, and those are regular callers for Talk Straight, many of them from outside of Nashville, from out of town, from Chicago, and some Alabama, Jacksonville, Florida, from New Orleans, from Detroit, Peoria, Illinois, Chicago, different places. So perhaps they will join us. We're here. This is really spotlighted for Nashville. And this is our last stop in South Nashville at the Edmondson Library. You're listening to Talk Straight. So tonight we get into our featured topic. Now, most often when we hear about the struggle of desegregation, that's something that concerns people across racial lines. I'm convinced of that. But when we hear about that conversation, depending on who you're speaking to, it's directed from either a political, an economic, or even a racial perspective, which I understand. However, rarely do you hear people talk about desegregation and issues relative to education in particular from a human perspective, from the human side of things. When we look at parents today in 2020, we look at the struggle that many of them face with their children in public schools. And since we're in Nashville, we're talking about Nashville-Davidson County. Not everybody, but far too many parents struggle with ensuring that their child gets the very best quality of education. Okay? And then you talk about opening the doors for other opportunities, choices, options for those parents. A lot of times you hear people talk about money. You hear people make the argument that it's a racial issue. Then you hear people come at it from a political perspective. But there's a human side to it. And historically, that has been the case. So tonight I want you to join me in the next hour and a half or so as we talk about desegregation, this historical event, issue that has had a lasting effect on American culture. Much of it is good because we've seen great improvement. But let's talk about that tonight. Brown versus Board of Education, Topeka, Kansas, from a human perspective in 2020. All right? And so for the next few minutes, let me walk through my monologue, and then we'll come back here to the phone lines, and we'll discuss, and we'll continue to have open dialogue. The number to call again is 657-383-0944. I do hope you can join us as we go through this process. February 25th, can you believe the month is already gone? 2020. Reverend Oliver Brown, the human face of desegregation. The Reverend Oliver Brown. Now, why do you say that, Dr. Green? That he's the human face of desegregation? Well, because he is. One text from the Holy Writ, chapter 3, verse 21. Consider what it says. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Fathers, admonishment to avoid provoking a negative action. Children, keep them from being discouraged. I wonder why it is the writer focuses his attention on fathers. Could it be because there's an expectation? Dad said, provoke not your children, the text says, such that they will become angry, lest they be discouraged. And that's what we've seen happen. We see young children as young as 10 now in the streets, breaking in cars here in Nashville, robbing people, and with weapons. Is that something we should be happy about? Absolutely not. Something that should be glorified? Absolutely not. It should scare us enough to do something to make a difference. Well, let's look at this from a historical perspective. Let's understand who Mr. Oliver, Reverend Oliver Brown was. In 1950, Oliver Brown was recruited to be a part of the Topeka NAACP's legal action to desegregation of public elementary schools in the city. So the NAACP correctly saw a problem, and they put resources behind trying to address it. Now, that you can argue that was a political position, but let's consider why Brown's name became labeled on it. At the time, Brown was just a welder at the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad. He was studying also to become a minister at that time in 1950. But here's the most important thing about Oliver Brown. He was a father. He was a husband to his wife, Leola. He was a husband to his daughter, Linda Carroll, his daughter, Cheryl, and his son, Terry. He was a father, a man working and wanting the best for his children. That's the human side of it, friends. That's the human side of it. Outside of the politics, outside of the discussions about if we make such moves, how is it going to affect the money that flow through certain agencies or organizations? Forget that. This was a father concerned about his children. By the fall of 1950, Brown was one of a group of 13 individuals or parents who served as plaintiffs for the case, and it would eventually, though, be named, be known as the Oliver L. Brown et al. Versus the Board of Education, Topeka, Kansas. Now, what was that issue? What was that issue? Was that these parents, they were concerned that their children had to be bused out of their neighborhoods, right, and taken away to other neighborhoods. Well, the only problem was that there were some pretty good schools right in the neighborhood, but those schools were segregated, and the only children that were allowed to go there were white children. These parents said there's something patently wrong with that. And our children have to go way off in order to get an education when they got schools right here. So can you see how the fight for parent control, parent choice, parent rights started pushing children into public schools, having access to resources from public schools, being able to participate with the promise that their education in public school will empower them to become productive citizens of the United States of America. That's how the fight began in terms of equality in education. Here we are in 2020. It's a different story, though. Lest I digress too far, let me get back on track here. Now, again, I was explaining what the real issue is. As a result of this, these parents complained. Yes, they went to the school board, and it went to others. And the only other option that they had resolved was to take it to the courts. Took it to the lower courts, nothing happened. Took it to the state appellate courts, nothing happened. Took it to the U.S. district courts, nothing happened. And finally, with the help of the NAACP, they found themselves in the United States Supreme Court, where Thurgood Marshall was the leading attorney for the NAACP. And you know the story. Ultimately, he became a chief justice himself, or took a seat on a jurist on the court himself, right? But this was a very human thing for Mr. Brown and his children. It had nothing to do with him trying to prove that he was a Democrat or Republican or a member of the NAACP or anything of that nature. Hardworking man who wanted his children to have a good education. Now, what's wrong with that? Is that not where we are today? We have parents who work hard all they want. They don't have to fight with nobody. They don't have to fall out of grace with anybody or be labeled and tagged with any title or anything like that. All they want is the best for their children. The reality is, due to what I believe is a challenged and broken system, for too many years, if this just happened overnight, a couple of things to be fixed, that'd be fine. But we're looking at a longitudinal problem. In other words, it's been going on for a period of years, a cycle of years. And we can identify root causes of the same problem that continues to fester. When we think about this historical event and how it shapes where we are, though, right here in Nashville, we can argue on both sides that new opportunities that have come by way of legislation, state of Tennessee providing for charter schools back in 2002. Most recently, 2015, if you have a child who is labeled in special ed for any reason, they have an option of getting a scholarship up to $7,800 and take their child out of that school that they're zoned to that's not meeting their needs and put it in a school that's approved by the State Department of Education to provide that education. That's a parent's choice, just like Oliver Brown, who became the face of the Brown versus Board of Education Supreme Court decision that today is having direct effect. Well, we don't know what your name is, but we know if your child is struggling in school and your child is prone to drop out, wind up in the streets, and heaven knows getting into what else, you, just like Oliver Brown, I don't know a parent that's going to see their child die. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure I'm not, though. And maybe you just don't know what the options are, where to go, where to turn. Well, this is why we're bringing this Parent Choice Network. We're building a network for parents to communicate, to have resources, information, and opportunities so that they can be empowered to make the difference for themselves and not have to depend solely on someone else to do it for. That's the challenge, beloved, that too often people find themselves, you know, heavily dependent on somebody else to make decisions for them. Now, if you're a little child, that's one thing, but you're a grown adult with children, somebody else got to dictate to you what you can have, when you can have, and how you can use it. Something is wrong with that. Something is wrong with that. So, all right, we got the phone lines open. Our topic tonight, Reverend Oliver Brown, the human face of desegregation. And as I just shared with you, we talked about how he was a father who wanted the best for his children, and he took it as far as he could to the Supreme Court. And guess what? It made a difference nationally. But here we are now, and I got some callers on the line. I'm going to ask them a question about that. We got Pastor Wallace here joining us here. How you doing, Pastor?
Yeah, I'm all right. How you doing, Pastor Doctor?
Great, great, great. And my friend out of St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah,
all right. I believe he goes by Pianta. How you doing, sir?
Doing fine. How are you?
Great, 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 great. So you may have heard a little bit about what we were talking about. We're really talking about the face of the Brown versus Board of Education Supreme Court landmark case. And that was Mr. Oliver Brown, who was a father, a minister, a welder, and a person who wanted the best for his children. The fight began to get African Americans in public schools, separate and get rid of separate but equal. But here we are now, gentlemen, and there are people who are fighting for opportunities to get them out of those schools and into other settings. Isn't that ironic? What do you think about that, either one of you?
Well, you know that wasn't the original intent of the Browns. You know that, don't you? The original intent was for them to have the same resources in the school that their children had as everybody else.
Right.
Their intent was never for physical desegregation or physical integration. And much of that came about later on with the Catholic Church with Cardinal Ritter. So, and a lot of people talked about that too. Norrell Hurston spoke ill about the decision that the Supreme Court justice made, indicating all deliberate speech.
Right.
And some others did too.
Right.
Even Clarence Thomas in Jenkins versus Missouri spoke against that. So that was a brainchild of the NAACP. You have the de facto segregation. That's because people attend where they want to rather than de jure, which is state or government sponsored.
So now let me ask you this, though. That's a good point. Should the fight be to use the government as your bully or your fist to put you where the government puts you somewhere, or should you really be in control of the wheel yourself? You understand what I'm saying? From the get-go. Because if the government is going to dictate to you how and when, you lose control, don't you? I mean,
you're a U.S. citizen, so you use the law, the courts, in order to set your presence to be under the guidance of the law. But here's the thing. It's not you. It was the other side that the courts didn't have no power over. Because what they've done, they moved out of public schools and started their own private schools.
Yes, that's right. And because of what you're saying, all deliberate speech, that clause right there is what really said, okay, we out of here. In fact, it was a group, it was a thing called the White Manifesto, it was a common pact among Southern states describing how they were going to fight against this Supreme Court ruling. And it was an interesting thing. Now, because I know, Pastor Wally, you grew up really directly being affected by it. I think you were in that era where metro schools had just started to branch off and follow the deliberate speed order and try to include blacks into them. What was your experience like with that right here in Nashville?
Integration? You talked about being integrated?
Yes, sir.
That happened. That happened. It wasn't a pleasing thing to me, but it happened. And the reason I say that, it took away from some of the things that I grew up expecting. For instance, you know, there's three particular schools in Nashville, and they all had to do with being a Tiger. It was a Washington Junior High Tiger, a Pearl High Tiger.
Okay.
And then it goes on to Tennessee State Tiger. So that was something that was basically desirable, you know, to me. So I don't use that as no excuse, but I will say that it did cause me to feel like I missed out on something that I actually desired. But I'm being young and just coming up, you know, in elementary, you know, can't wait to go to Washington Junior High. So when I did go to that Washington Junior High school for
they
1 year, then that's when they made the moves, you know.
Right.
Yeah, that was
right.
Pretty tough. Yeah,
interesting,
yeah, pretty
man.
Tough.
That's interesting. So but here's the thing. That's the point of tonight's discussion. When we talk about desegregation, very rarely do we hear people speak from a personal or human side of it. We often get into the arguments and the fights over politics, right, the political arguments for or against it, or even the economic arguments for or against it. Very rarely, again, do we hear, and I'm talking about tonight, I'm going to just try to dispel some of the myths about the education savings program, because right here locally, we having some, a lot of rhetoric, a lot of heated discussions and what have you, for and against and things of that nature. And I want to try to dispel some of those myths. But the truth is, it's really about parents being able to have the opportunity. How can you tell St. Louis, a parent, that they don't have a right to choose what's best for their children? I mean, what, isn't that the unmitigated gall? What about this, St. Louis? You there? Okay, look like we lost it. What do you think about that, Pastor? If I told you that there's a dollar with your name on it, but you can't decide how to spend your dollar, you got to let me spend it for you. And you just got to live with whatever I get you. Well, what about that, Pastor?
That has to do with what, you know, you and I were talking about the schools being integrated, and it wasn't my choice. It wasn't my parents' choice. And it was just like going with the flow. Now, had they had a chance to realize that I want my child to go to this particular school, should they have the right, I would say yes. It's amazing that when you have something, as you said, and it should be your choice,
mm-hmm.
and your choice is not even valid because of
wow.
what has been said, it's got to be done this way by law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, and that to me, I didn't get a whole lot of good energy out of that. I was thinking, like, it bothered me for a long time. You know,
yeah.
I even in my book I wrote, you know, I wrote about going to W.A. Mann's Junior High. That's where I
right.
was integrated.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a long way from the Tennessee. That was a long way from a Washington Junior High Tiger, Prairie High Tiger, and hopefully to go to college to be a Tennessee State Tiger. And so that, to me, it lingered for a while. And then it got to a point where I understood that it wasn't because I didn't want to go there. It was something
mm-hmm.
that was put in motion by whoever put it in motion. I'm young and, you know, going to school and just thinking about wanting to go to Washington Junior High School just to play ball. And,
right.
you know, and,
right.
and that did not take place, man, at neither one of those schools. I don't think that it's fair because you should have a choice. The Word of God says choose you this day.
Well,
so
I
have a choice. That means that, you know, I have a right to choose what school that I would like for my kids to go to, or my parents should have that right. You know, why not? And then it's either you're for me or you're against me. You know, the Word of God does say that.
Yeah.
So the law was given. The law was given, but it was never obeyed.
Uh-huh.
Never obeyed. I can tell that.
So do you think it was an error to push? Well, and really what the NAACP was trying to do was to give Mr. Brown the opportunity to send his children to their local school initially. Do you think that was an error to go that far to fight it? Or should they just lay back and let it work itself out?
Well, I don't know about it being an error or just lay back and let it work itself out. I just go back to the being able to choose. You know, do you have a right to choose? Being
okay.
that when you get out to being was it an error or not, I can only say that how it lingered on me, you know, knowing I'm your child.
Could.
And I'm thinking about Washington Junior High School, and I'm 40 years of age. I'm using that as an example. And I've been out of high school for some years, and I'm still thinking about how I missed out on Washington Junior High and how I missed out on Prairie High Tigers and didn't go to Tennessee State, man. And, you know, I still had those thoughts even today. You know, what would it have been like had I have been to had I been able to play with Washington Junior High, I'm not talking about the high school year or the college, what that thought just kicks in. You know, I wonder what would it have been had I been able to choose to say, I'm still going to Washington Junior High School. I'm not going down there at W.A. Bay.
Wow.
Now,
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
Okay.
It's amazing.
Well, now, okay, what difference would it make if both of them were doing either doing well or not doing? See, because here's the thing here right now, Pastor. There are some schools in Nashville that are doing really, really well academically. And even there are other programs.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are others where you do have high incidence of violence and children acting out, and test scores are very low. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
And some people have phrased it as being getting a prison sentence where you have to stay in a zone school or a group of schools that you have no other place to go. You know, what do you think that's a fair statement, or how do you look at it then? Because, again, let's look at it. You force, the law forced people to go to school together, whites and blacks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it forced them with all deliberate speed to ensure that African-Americans got in these traditional schools. Now that they're there, here we are in 2020, and there are people that are unhappy yet again. What do you do?
Yeah, do you go back to saying we're going to rearrange it, or do you just say, okay, well, it's just the way it is.
That's the way it's going to be. Right.
Yeah, well,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what's happening right now is just that this is the way it is. You know, your choice still does not have the power to be able to take it back to where it would be appropriate. And you say, well, we both of them have the same things to offer, you know, what difference does it make?
Right.
Okay, it has a major difference. It has a major difference that I could see. I'm going to give you a good example, staying on that particular topic, on how I ended up playing ball with W.A. Bass, because they had a ball team down there. I played with them. But did it have the same effect? No, it did not.
Okay.
Washington Junior High had a thing. Yeah, and so I understand there is a difference. By way, did they have a gym? They had a gym. Did they have basketball? Did they have the uniforms? Yeah, all of that. But it still was different. So here we are with the learning, the schooling, you know, the education and things like that. Do they have books?
Sure.
Do they have the teachers? Do they have all those things? But is it different?
Mm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
I would say so. You know,
right.
And is it supposed to be different? I would think everybody's supposed to be on the same accord. You know, that's what I would think. So when it comes down to education, let's say, for instance, somebody that's very popular by way of having their finances very much intact, and then there's a family that does not have that. But
mm-hmm.
does that take
mm-hmm.
away from the learning, from the education?
Right.
Can that person who had, because this has happened, that person who have big money, children, they're probably not even, the grades are very bad, still somehow or another, they found a way to make it work. Was it because they had big money or because of who family, it was? What was it? What caused that to take place? Why the person who's there, who didn't have a whole lot of money or everything, but they was able to get good grades. And you wonder why that person that had all that money and the kids would have gotten bad grades had it not been for the parents having that kind of money,
mm-hmm.
that they got that squared away some kind of way. That kind of stuff happens,
but,
you know.
But you know what, though, Pastor? The truth is,
mm-hmm.
is it really about money, though? Is that really the factor about money? Or is it another factor? Because under the right circumstances, if you can reach a child, right, you can reach them based on their learning needs and their ability to comprehend and process information. And everybody
mm-hmm.
does it on different levels. You know, that's part of what makes us individual. Is it really about how much money is put into the school or the type of technology you have, per se, or is it the ability to communicate with and connect with not only the children but their parents in a way that you get the most out of them? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it should be on the same wavelength. That's what it's supposed to be about. But
right.
Is it that way? That's the question. Is it fair? You know,
that's $50 million question.
Goes back to the law. The law was given but never obeyed. And so if the child is not doing well in school and the parents are very wealthy and there's a lot of wealthy kids are passing in this particular family here, kids are having bad grades, they're going to go in there and get something done because of their wealth, possibly.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that's
right.
Supposed to happen. But sometimes, so is it all about the money? It shouldn't be. It should be about.
No.
You know, as you say, it shouldn't be about the money. But
that's
what happens.
I got St. Louis joining us again. So, St. Louis, when people talk about, that's just them Republicans. That's all them Republicans. They rich, and they don't want to support public schools. Our teachers need that money. They need support. So you see how the conversation goes to money and politics as opposed to really about what it should be with the children. Go ahead.
It's because people don't know what they're talking about, and they've been misled. Federal government don't have nothing to do with your public school unless you invite them in. Nothing. That's your school. That's
right.
The people of
right.
that district. That is their school to do with however they want to. But when you invite the federal government into a school district with ROTC and also entitlements, then they will try to have some influence. And then it depends on how much you bring them in. We have two school districts in outside of St. Louis, Clayton and Ladue, where about 97% of the operation revenue for those schools come from the local community. They receive hardly nothing from the federal government and a minuscule amount from the state. So the state and the federal government can't tell them jack on how to run their school.
Now, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So now, but you know, across the United States, that's the general setup now, where they're going to receive those Title I and I think some Title II dollars and funds and some funds, you said, in athletics and even ROTC and other federal programs that kind of help keep your school programming and options together. And you're right, things like issues with prayer and so forth and so on, that becomes a big issue. And, you know, this thing about gender-specific or neutral bathrooms, that's another big factor, right? But when the federal government get in and you look at what the law says on the federal level, you open the door to those things. Now, but again, here we go, going down that road about what grown people want. What about what's needed for the children? I'm talking about the worst child in the school now. I'm talking about the one that struggled to read, to write, to do arithmetic. Well, because you got money. It ain't like they don't have money. Education is over $300 billion industry annually. Annually. That's a lot of money. So it ain't that money's not being spent on it. The question is, how well are you or effectively are you using those dollars? And at the end of the day, the children, Pastor Wall, are the ones. They give you a bag of stale corn chips. They pay 2 cents for, and you got a whole dollar, man. You go get you a fresh bag for 10 cents. They done bought some for 2 cents.
Well, you know,
people
don't got to the point now where they expect too much from a public school, other than education. They want the school to feed the kids. They want the school to wash the kids' clothes. They want the school to babysit the kid until they can come by and pick them up, and so on and so on and so on. But as I said before, that whatever the direction of the education that goes on in a school district is literally left up to the people. They have the power to do that.
Right. Well, And so that's, people need to know that, don't they? Somebody needs to empower those people with that knowledge and information, that you are in a better position than you think you are, but you're just not using all of the leverage that you have, simply because you don't know. You know what I'm saying? And that's an interesting dynamic, though. Go ahead. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
And the only time the state comes in, because they are the immediate authority, because you are spending public money, is if the children are not learning. And
now,
the way they tell if the children are learning is give them basic tests to see how they perform. And they also look at other things, too, like attendance. They look at resources that's available and so on and so on and so on. And I think some of that stuff really goes astray. They want to know about the certification. See, I don't believe in certified in teachers. Teachers don't have to be certified for children to learn. There's too many examples of that all over the place.
Well, now, wait a minute now. Let me lean on you on that. So the point of the certification is to ensure that they are strong in their content area, right?
Not
is
really.
Is that a basis? Now, that's interesting because now you get more and more where they're bringing people in from other experiences, people that have been in business industry, right?
Yes.
And they can teach things and not necessarily certified in a particular content area. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
You are absolutely right. See, we had a school district in the St. Louis area called Normandy School District.
Okay.
And the fire chief of St. Louis at the time, and, you know, others, wanted to put the emergency medical technician, EMT, a license course in the high school. So when the children graduated from high school, they would have it, and thus they would meet one of the prerequisites for being hired by fire departments.
Interesting.
Because, because when they got out of the high school, the only way they could get that, there was only two ways. One, the fire department would have to hire them, and it was a big squabble in that area because these white-controlled fire departments were not hiring blacks. If they hired them, then they could send them to school, or they can come out of high school and pay about $1,500 to gain that certification themselves. Well, we tried to get it in the high school, and the State Board of Education said that whoever taught the course had to be a certified teacher. So, in fact, they was trying to prevent it from going down. Now, let me tell you something else that had happened.
Okay.
At one time, the requirement was EMT basic. That's a curriculum that you can get from the Department of Transportation for free. They'll send it to you on digital form. Now they got EMT. Now they stipulate that you got to be a paramedic in order to work on the fire department, too. Absolutely.
Wow.
And also, if you came from Illinois, where you were a fireman, and came to Missouri, in some districts, they would make you do it all over again. So basically what they're trying to do is control it and keep people out of it. And here's another thing.
Yeah.
In black communities, them fire districts would float a bond issue, or float information to the black constituents about raising their pension, raising their pay, and black folks are following like blind sheep.
Well, now, Pastor Waller and I were talking about this not too long ago. In Tennessee, I think it's like 460-some different stipulations that you got to be certified for certain positions, right? And in a lot, particularly the industry that knocks African Americans out, that they were strongest in historically, is construction and vocational skills. So you have a lot of guys that got good, strong vocational skills. They just not certified. So they can't even make money like that without, like you're saying, very similar to what you're saying there in St. Louis, without being able to go and get spend money, right? And go. Now, actually, I got to give credit to this governor and the previous governor, because they've included some funding and resources to include that in But it's up to the school district to do it. That's the challenge, to include that in their curriculum and what have you, so that young people can come out with those, the training, to meet the requirements for certification. It's a hustle, though, you know. And, Pastor, you know a lot of guys around here right now, man, that are very talented, naturally talented. But their hands are tied because they don't have a formal certification. And I think that's an interesting argument to make. St. Louis, what do you think about that, Pastor Wallace, in terms of the certification deal, that requirement, you got to be certified?
And the stipulations they're talking about, and you're talking about now, check this out, you have to be certified. That
mm-hmm.
right there is a strike already.
It is.
If you're not, you cannot even come this way.
Mm.
So what are there left to do? You know, and if you don't qualify to go to this particular school, I'm using for an example, I mean, even though they offer a lot of things over here, but in order to be certified, you know, that'll get you in there. In order to be certified,
right.
Though, what do you have to do to become that?
Mm-hmm.
Right from the start, from the beginning, that's an issue. Go back to the law you was talking about. Some people we were talking about earlier that have, and those that have
mm.
not.
Right.
But if the school is open, do I have a right to go to that school?
There you go.
You know, if that, do I have that right? Well, you just check out how that would roll. If you don't qualify, if you don't have certain things, you can't go to this school.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? I have a desire to want to learn. I have a desire.
Right.
Is that strong enough? Well, I don't know how good it is, but, you know, just the thought of that, man. It's like to have equal share. That's what we're talking about, because if one and the other one don't, does that take away from me having a desire to go to that school? Well, all them people got all that money, but I would like to go
right.
to that school myself.
Let me ask you this. Could that be a reason why so many young people shut down on education and just say, forget about it? Somebody's running the game and hustling me, and I ain't going to win, so I'm gonna just going to find me another way to get my in. Could that be
just
a reason?
Do what you can.
Yeah.
Well, he's talking about teachers, aren't you, Pat? He's talking about teachers. He's not talking about students learning.
Well, but the system, though, St. Louis, it's the whole system that says the teachers can't even provide the instruction, for instance, to be able to lead to mastery of certification skills unless the district say they can teach that. You see what I mean?
Well, that's
so
what them teachers' unions, and yeah, somebody's mm-hmm. talking about Republicans. Republicans are for you controlling your school district and doing what you want to do with it. It's them Democrats.
Okay.
It's
well,
them Democrats and teachers unions
okay.
that are not for that. And that NAACP. I tell you what you do. And I think we've done this one of your shows. Take an
okay.
elected official, a black one.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's what we're talking about. Go to Ballotpedia and look up their position on issues.
Right.
And you will see what their issue is on education. And they are not for school choice. Why is that?
Right.
Because parents would be able to take their child away from these paradigms. Then, next thing you know, there ain't no teachers there to do work. And if there's no teachers there to do work, there's no teachers there to pay dues toward the teachers' union.
Well, and let me say this. Hold your thought right there. Right now, there are schools, even in our district, I understand, that are underused. What does that mean, underused? They have more space or classroom space in the building than they have students. But yet, when the principal sends out a request for funds, it's enough money to fund every one of those classrooms being full, but they're not full for different reasons. So the argument becomes you're taking vital money from the school system, but really you're not using that money very wise. So, and that may explain why every year you're asking for more money. You're spending it, but you're not getting the results on it.
Well, they're asking that from the state, because every 11 o'clock every morning, and I don't know if it's in all school districts, but I know it's in some, they do a head count, 11 o'clock in the morning. And that head count determines proportionally what that building gets based on the number of students in it in the next pay draw.
Correct. And within the first 6 weeks, that's the first head count that really determines how many students they anticipate having throughout the rest of the school year. Now, when you have things like children going to charter schools or even children going homeschooling, I'm going to talk about that a little bit in the last turn. Even children doing homeschooling, right? Well, now this new opportunity, children putting their children in private schools because they have resources for it. That's
where it should be.
Well, their argument is that you're hurting our ability to maintain the status quo, what we've been had.
Well, that's not true.
That goes back.
Let me tell you what goes on.
Okay.
When you have, for instance, that a child sitting in a school in your district, they have what's called the ADA, the average daily attendance, and that amount that over a year's time may be $14,000 that they use for teachers' instruction, books, and desks and all.
Right.
Now, a parent decided to take their child and put them in a public charter school. Well, they take the child, and maybe two-thirds of that $14,000 goes and follow that child to that charter school. Some cases may be less than that. So the rest of it stays there at the school building, based on their attendance at the charter school. Now, you got, say 50%, 7,000 goes with the child, 7,000 stay with the school district. Well, you got $7,000 and no child to contend with. So what's the problem?
Well, and so, again, it's about how their funding formula is set up and how they basically determine how many teachers they're going to need based on the anticipation of how many students, based on the number of students within the school district. We have here about 82,000-something students in the school district.
In Nashville?
In Davidson County, Nashville-Davidson County, the school system itself. I think it's about 82,224-something.
That's like
that.
A lot.
And, well, it's less than Memphis, though, and Chicago and other places. When you think about it, here's what it really boils down to is how well, again, do you use the money for the students that you have? And I understand that, and let me just make this clear. I had the privilege of working with some very talented public school teachers who had been there for years, longer than I have, and some of them longer than I've been alive. They've done a heck of a job. But that's not the issue. That's not the issue. The real issue is about the children that are falling through the cracks.
Different story there.
Well, that's the story I want to talk about. That's the human side of it. You understand what I'm saying?
That's a whole different story.
Well, that's the story we need to have a conversation about. I don't really want to fight over what grown people need. You know, what about the baby?
Yeah, see, you got two things going on. You got children that's learning, children that's not learning. And the children that are learning are learnable are being forced to stick with the children that are not learning.
Yes, sir.
And that's what the parents don't want. The parents want to take their child and put them elsewhere where they can be a challenge and also exposed to what it is that they figure the child needs to know in order to go to the next step and perform.
Then you got
parents who don't have that in mind, who are not pursuing that for their children. And then you have children that's not learning. See, learning starts at home. That child ain't going to learn no more than that parent demand of them. The school teacher ain't going to do it, because school teacher going to get paid anyway, unless you got some bleeding hearts.
Well, you got some dedicated teachers now. Come on now. You got some very dedicated public school teachers, man. And you got to give them their props, because they are.
Well, you got some dedicated you got some dedicated teachers, but if you got a teacher that's teaching the fourth grade and 2/3 of the class is reading at second grade level, I don't care how dedicated they are, they're not going to be able to perform effectively.
It's tough, but I never will forget when, I think I told y'all about some of my experience when I was teaching high school. You got to deal with what you get, man. Yeah, you got to.
And what happens, you sacrifice those who are functional versus those who are not.
Now, that's the real problem right there, is the sacrifices that not only the struggling children, but those children that are there. That's why I took my son out of public schools. And it was a struggle, but it was a choice my wife and I made.
It's a wise choice you made.
We put him in a private school because he was not being challenged. And you understand what I'm saying? Now, I don't think it's not just the case that they can't do that, but the systematic approach to teaching, I believe, is broken and wrong. Now, and I can say that having come out of the system myself, but so not to be a hypocrite, I offered, by way of my charter school application, a proposal about how we can fix it and remedy those things, specifically for black males that tend not to be challenged. Not all of them now, let me be clear. But
let me tell you how that works.
Hold on one second, St. Louis. And I'll tell you for sure, those young men that are your behavior problem, you give me one of them and I'll show you one who's not, has not been properly challenged to their skill set. And that's really where the rubber meets the road right there. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
It's two things. Now, in St. Louis, they had this alternative school. That's what you're talking about. And that's probably what you need to be mimicking, where you have people in there up to like 22 maybe that can come back and, pick up where they left off. But let's look at this. Let's look at this. This is where the politics come into it. And this is where Democrats versus Republicans. Mm-hmm. Most blacks live in what's called Democratic districts. They have Democratic politicians that have been there for a long time.
Right.
Democrats is going to be pushing these social programs.
That's what they do.
Yeah, me and you going to be square up. Keep it 100. Let's keep it 100.
Keep it 100.
All right. The people that need these social programs is what keep these politicians in office. All right.
Okay.
Now, these politicians ain't dumb. They ain't only thinking for today. They thinking for tomorrow. And who is tomorrow? It's the kids that's not learning. That's going to fall in the same position where they're going to need social programs, therefore continue to vote for these politicians. They don't want to let you go.
Man. And that's a cycle, isn't it? And
it's a cycle.
We see this prevalent in voting precincts that are predominantly African American, where those children are zoned to schools where they seem to be in a Pastor Waller, a trap that they can never get out of. And the parents are not even conscious of what's going on oftentimes.
It's a shame.
They know something's wrong, but they just don't know how to put their finger on it. I know I'm hurting. I just can't tell you why I'm hurting or how I'm hurting, but I'm hurting.
Then you know what happens next. Your federal government and your business people say, look, we got this group here. We need to bring some immigrants in.
That's what they do. I ain't going to even go there. Right.
Well, that's what they do. They cannot fulfill with their own population, they're going to bring people in from the outside.
But see, that's why in St. Louis I have chose to focus on the human side of the issue of desegregation, because just desegregating people and forcing people to be together is not the answer, clearly.
No, it's not going to happen. And because when your child go to one of those schools and they can't – now, I'm going to say this, too. You do have young people that do good, and I'm happy for them. When they get out of their cage in the traditional school. But a lot of them cannot make it because they're not prepared. And you know where that shows up at? That shows up when they go to the historical black colleges.
Wait a minute now. You stepped on my toes, dude. I'm from an HBCU now. Hold on now. No, well,
they go there and they are not prepared. And those professors, I feel sorry for them because they can never demonstrate the true worth and skills that they have because the students that they're working with could never receive it entirely. They're not prepared where they came from.
Let me flip that before, and we got to get to we're in our last segment. I want to get to some of deal with some of these myths about the option for the scholarship. But to your point, though, the reality is that if anybody, and I'm talking about myself now, you come with a deficit from behind, if you don't have the worth and the tenacity to play catch up, you'll still be behind. And you're right. That's a challenge in a lot of HBCUs for some students to be able to get them where they're on the money and they're, you know, they're able to.
That's why it takes them 6 years to graduate.
Well, and
it's not they're paying 50% more.
Yeah, and it's not everywhere.
And guess what,
doctor?
Guess what, doctor? They wouldn't have to pay anything if they could qualify for the scholarships that's out there specifically for black kids. They can't even apply for.
I must say that President Trump has just done a fabulous thing. If you look at it, don't take my word for it. Look at the federal initiatives that he's made to help HBCUs to bridge the gap. You don't have to like him, but look at that policy relative to the Department of Education and the support they've given just recently to historically black colleges and universities, such as this and PSU.
And look at what he's trying to do to create choice, like what we've been talking about tonight.
That's another big piece here. And again,
the political fight
is where people are stuck. Go ahead, Rick.
Then when you create the choice and you come in one day on Monday, you got 50 kids in that classroom, and you come in there Wednesday, you only got 15 because people don't use choice to take theirs elsewhere. Now, that's where you come in at. They're your child, the children to work with.
Yeah. So, okay, let me go ahead and I'm going to walk through this little piece here with you, and I want to dispel some. I got my assistant here, Miss Mac. I call her Miss Mac. She got her beautiful daughters in the house. Just say hello, ladies. Hey. So, you know, but that's so true. And I'm going to go to the Parents Choice Network, to the web, the blog page that I took everybody to last week. And on there, and that's Parents Choice Network, PCTN.org. And when you get there, you'll see we've been talking about private school options or the educational savings account, which is a state scholarship that will empower parents to find a school for their children. Pretty soon, next month, you're going to be able to go to the State Department of Education website and look at schools that have been approved to send your child there. All right? They've been approved for you to use these dollars to send your child. That's the real connection. That's a real connection. Now, I'm not saying that you got to do that. I'm saying it's a choice for you and it's an option. Right? That's what we're talking about. But I want to go on that same page there where it talks about the school choice option. You might see a little small writing, and it says at the very bottom, educational savings account, myth versus fact. Myth versus fact. That's what I want. And you can look at this after we finish the show tonight. We only have another about 20 minutes or so before we have to wrap up here. But I want to look at some of these because I've been hearing this in the local.
The education library is only 55 minutes. Studies in the rooms are vacated in 40 minutes, and public computers will shut down in 40 minutes.
All right. That's the library making an announcement. They're going to kick us out of here, guys. no, but we're in good shape here. We're in good shape. We're going to wrap up this last few minutes here. some of the conversation that we've met with individuals is the concern that it's taking money away from the schools and it's draining the city's budget and so forth and so on. Well, here's one of them. Here's a myth. Educational savings accounts are prone to fraud, people are saying. Here's the fact. Tennessee educational savings funds can only be used at schools and providers authorized by the Tennessee Department of Education. So it's not a willy-nilly thing. The Department of Education will have authority to reject or remove poor-performing providers and schools. Additionally, all program expenditures will be subject to audit by the Comptroller of the Secretary of State Treasury. I'm sorry. Now, what you need to understand is that contrary to the myth and the people trying to scare you away from taking advantage of this option is there are safety measures in place to make sure it's just not used and it's messed up. Now, you know, you can argue that a lot of this is going on in public schools. But that's not what we want parents. That's not what we talk about. We're not trying to get you and goat you into a fight with nobody. We're trying to empower you with information. Here's another myth. They say studies show that educational savings accounts don't work in other states. Here's the truth. Research overwhelmingly shows that school choice programs across the country help students learn better. Of the 18 gold standard, quote-unquote, studies on school choice programs, 14 showed positive effects, 2 showed neutral effects, and 2 showed negative effects. Opponents of educational savings accounts only cherry-pick the 2 negative studies and ignore the large body of evidence showing school choice programs actually work. So the more you know, parents, the better you are able to make the decisions that's best for you. Now, here's another one. Educational savings account rob public schools of funds. I was on a radio show locally here in Nashville, and this was a conversation that came up. So part of what we're doing is educating people so you can make an informed decision, okay? So the claim is that it's robbed, Pastor Waller, public schools of funding. Well, consider this. The Education Savings Program will actually increase per pupil funding in the districts where students can use the Education Savings Account. For the first 3 years of the program, the budget will fund a school improvement grant program that will send additional funds to school districts despite the district not bearing any cost of educating the child on an education savings account. Grants will be calculated based on the allocation of students entering the education savings account program. This is what you were talking about, St. Louis, where you had districts that didn't have those children there. Well, the state has given consideration to that factor. And the myth out there is that you're going to rob the school district. That's the furthest thing from the truth. They put.
You know what's going to happen?
Go ahead, right quickly.
You know what they're getting prepared for? Because traditional education as we know it today is not going to exist in the near future. For two reasons. Now, one reason because it's not producing what it should be producing. And the robbery goes on when you have children coming out of these schools and don't have the skills that they should have, but somebody got paid all the time that they was there. That's where the robbery comes in.
Okay. And now, let me – that's a good point there, St. Louis. That's a very good point. But let me use this time wisely because I want to get – thank you, ma'am, on Facebook for your comment. We appreciate you. I hope you hope this information is useful for you. There are a few people that are following us on Facebook, and I want to make sure I can answer these questions for them here because, again, a lot of the rhetoric and the conversation here locally is there. Here's another myth. there's no academic accountability for educational savings account students. Okay? Here's the fact, though. Students using the educational savings account will take the math and language arts section of the state assessment. They must. Even if you're in a private school, these private
or homeschool,
make sure you do that by this new legislation. An annual report will be generated to the governor and General Assembly on the impact of the program on schools and students. Okay? Another myth. Income cap for eligibility is too high, they say. Income cap, in other words, how much money you make, your regular income. Here's the fact, though. The income eligibility is capped at 200%. We're looking at free lunch or $66,950 for a four-person household. These are not wealthy individuals at all. They are hardworking families, just like Mr. Brown was. He was a welder. Okay, hardworking folks who are often unable to move to a different school zone. They can't afford to. They can't afford to pack up and cut out like some people can. They shouldn't be trapped, Pastor Waller, in a failing school because they can't afford to move. That
and you know why they can't move, right?
Well, they can't afford it, for one.
Well, they can't afford
it
because they came out of that school system, and the skills that they got, they can't demand enough salary and wages, whereas it would allow them to move out. They're trapped.
But watch this. But watch this, St. Louis. We know that's the truth, right? We know that's the underlying factor. But let's not even beat them up on that right now. Let's see how we can empower them to make the best of where they are, though, for their children, even if they can't benefit from it now. No, they can't retroactively go back, change their life. But they're working hard now, and they want the best for their children. That's really where the focus is. That's what I talk about when I talk about the human face or effect of this whole process and this conversation, this dialogue about school choice versus stacking the decks for traditional processes and what have you. So,
and actually, real quick.
Go ahead, right quickly, and then I get to these lessons.
No, I was
going to
say, if you made $1 million, if you paid into that school district, you should be able to take advantage of what they offer.
Yeah. So, I mean, here's the thing.
Go ahead, next two.
If you don't pay your taxes, Uncle Sam going to come get you, ain't he?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to come get you and take everything you got. But
they
yet,
will,
you
too.
You don't have the opportunity to have what it is you need or want. Okay, I digress. St. Louis got me all over the place. Leave me alone, St. Louis. All right, here we go. Here's another myth. This doesn't improve the educational system overall. This is what they say. Here's the truth. School choice benefits more than just the students who use an educational savings account. It benefits all students by spurring innovation, driving healthy competition, and reducing class sizes in these public schools. Now, you tell me that doesn't have a positive, proactive effect. Bottom line, all right, here's the other myth. Why not just give more funds to the public schools, Pastor Wallace? We already have. We don't need to make no more schools. Well, just keep throwing money at them. Let them have it. Let them play around with it. Well, here's the fact. Parents should be able. Let me repeat that. Parents, those are the ones that make the babies. They should be able to choose the school that best meets the individual needs for their children. Now, I can't say that loud enough. For many Tennessee students, the public schools they are zoned to does not meet their individual needs, their individual. What has happened, and I've said this for a long time, is that too many children are seen as commodities, dollar figures, not individuals that deserve to be taught on the individual level. And when you have a balkanized school system, it's hard to be able to do that when you are concerned about just spending money and running a systematic process economically. You know, you need an environment. Every child needs an environment where they can thrive. I said it often. You can't teach them if you can't reach them. And, yes, even if they're coming from the housing project, they deserve and need to be reached. Even if their parents are struggling with alcoholism or drug addiction or gambling or whatever it is, those children still deserve to be reached. You can't teach them if you can't reach them. All right? These families have no other option. They lack the economic means to move to different school districts or pay for independent school tuition. We should not force them to stay in the school that does not work for them. That is a trap. That is a trap. This is the human part of it. All right, go ahead.
And I'm going to have to go political on you. You're Joe Biden's. You're Bernie Sanders. Your Democrats do not want that. And I'm not saying that. I'm saying it from experience.
How y'all doing? Come on in. Come on in. Okay.
I'm saying it from experience.
So, ladies, just wave your hand in the air like you just don't care. Say, all right, we're doing a live podcast. Thank y'all for coming. She's going to give me information. Follow up with us, and we'll be happy to answer any other questions that you guys have. All right. Thank you all so much for stopping by. So we're wrapping up these last few minutes of the show, and it's so true. I mean, I want to say, Lord, I try. You may notice it. I try to stay away from the little bickering and the fighting. You know what I mean?
But just leave that to me.
I want to deal with what's real. What is it going to make a difference? What's going to bring the changes that we need? That's what I'm concerned. That's what.
Well,
I
for what I hear, you're on the right track, and I hear the language that you. I've heard this language before. I know how what it's designed to do, and so and
okay.
I know why it was created because this is not something new for me. But you're on the right
okay.
track.
Well,
and the reason why this is being tested is because, as I said before, public schools, as you know it today, is going to come to an end because the modern way of educating is different, and the way that we've been doing it in the past have not proven to create the results for especially for one segment of the population, and you're just wasting money.
Yeah. So. Let me say this by way of announcement, Nashville. This coming Friday, that will be February the 28th, we will be at Fisk University in the Appleton Room, and we're going to be offering a very powerful lecture on this related topic, the fight over quality for education from 1954 to 2000. What's interesting to me is that it started with Mr. Brown and people, other parents like Mr. Brown, not just in Topeka, Kansas, but all over the United States, that were desirous of change in how their children were being taught and opportunities, right? And so they were fighting for inclusion in public schools and taking resources, having resources there. In 2020, you see a reversal because the public schools, I would argue, St. Louis, the business model of the traditional public school is not sustainable because it's too
Well, you
top
know
end.
What?
And it,
I wish I could
second.
Give you.
Hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second. It's too top heavy, and it strangles the very people that need the schools the most, and those are the children. And that's what's led to now the desire for informed parents to say, we want options to go elsewhere. That's where we're going to be Friday night, February 28th, Fisk University. That's 1000 17th Avenue North. And you can park behind Jubilee Hall, or you can park on 16th Phillips, or you can park on Meharry Boulevard, 17th Meharry Boulevard. But come on out. Come on out. Check us out. 7 o'clock p.m. Friday night. We'd love to have you there at Fisk University. We're going to be doing And then we're going to see the viewing of Miss Virginia, a story about a mother out of D.C. who fought to save her sons from the street through private school choice options. All right, right quickly, St. Louis, go ahead, and then we'll...
I wish I could get you this one piece called The Ravages of Brown. And Clarence Thomas is being quoted in that piece in a court decision called Missouri versus Jenkins. And if you hear what he talks about, you would be proud of him like I am. See, blacks have been misled about Clarence Thomas. If you email me, I'll send you a copy. You got a pencil.
Okay, I got your email. You gave it to me.
You got my email, my LC still?
Yes.
Email me, and I'll get you a copy of that because it fits right into what you're trying to do.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. You're right. And I don't even want to make the focus on Clarence Thomas. You know,
you don't. You're talking about education. Because what's going to happen, your plan there can easily become a court case. All somebody got to do is go to a court and say, put an injunction on it.
And that's not what I'm advocating. What I'm trying to do is empower. If it takes that point, then fine. But what I'm saying is there are resources and opportunities that are available for parents today. You don't have to beg. But see, here's the thing about me. For some time, I've been advocating for these things, and that's why I ran for public office. If I had been elected, those are the type of things I would have been advancing, not from a political position of a Republican or Democrat, but because this is what we need. This is what's going to help save our children. I'm tired of seeing young boys get killed in the street and killing one another. I'm tired of seeing them drop out of school and go to prison. I'm sick and tired of that. And what is it that we can do about it? And this is my resolve. So what you see me do, I don't really give a hill of beans about what somebody thinks about a political party. If you ask me personally, now, then nobody asks me, but if you ask me personally, we'd probably be better off as a nation without a party system at all. But that's
It don't work like that.
I ain't going to get in that whole nother conversation. But my point is,
you got to use the tools. You got to use all the tools. You know, I was the field coordinator for African Center Curriculum for the St. Louis chapter of the National Black United Front. And I have helped schools around a lot of schools to get the programs in them, that African Center Curriculum that, you know, they saw.
Okay.
Like Detroit, Kansas City, and so on and so on.
Sure.
Politics do play a big part in it. You have to be able to face them.
St. Louis, I know that. I'm not blind. Here's my thing. I know that. And I smell it. I can smell politics a block away. So it ain't surprising when it come up. I can hear his footsteps. You understand what I'm saying? That's where I can recognize. See, I'm glad, Pastor Waller, part of my come up is from the street. Because that makes me understand that game, no game. And I know when somebody's trying to run game. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm trying to empower people to be able to make choices for themselves. And tell people, put your game in your pocket and step off. Because I'm looking out for my children right now. I'm sick and tired of the game. My pretending days are over. I'm going to leave the action.
And you know, to remind you one other thing, your desires has been going on when I first got into it back in the 1970s with Bedford Stuy, 1972, matter of fact. Many people have came around with the same type of desires you have. You're here in 2020, and I hope that we're talking about 2030, 2035, that the same thing ain't going on.
Well,
but anyway,
I tell you what, I can't speak for nobody else, man, but I can show talk for doctor.
Yeah.
Hickory Dickory Doctor. I can talk for him. I ain't talking for nobody else but me. And I feel you. Yesterday is yesterday. Today is today, and we moving forward. Full steam ahead. We out, man. We out. But I appreciate
all right, I'll see you guys later.
All right, thank you so much. So, you guys, you've been listening to Talk Straight. This is our special series on Tuesday night. This is our last Tuesday in the Edmondson Library. We're scheduled next month, starting the 10th. We'll be in East Nashville. And depending on how things go, because we're going to be out doing some ground campaigning too, some leg work. So you might catch us literally on the street. With some of our live podcasts, But go to PCNTN.org, PCNTN.org. That's where the information is. And you can contact us there and communicate with us. Send us an email. We'd be happy to answer all of your questions and give you what you need. Thank you so much for following us here. I want to send a shout-out to Edmondson Library and thank them for the opportunity to be able to present here. And, again, we'll be over in East. That will be the East Nashville branch that we'll be doing our podcast from and sharing the same information. If you're in East Nashville, come see us. Get ready to come see us next month. Get ready to come see us. That new door will be opening for parents to go check those schools out, and we'll be telling you about that as well. Friday night. Where are we going to be Friday night, ladies? Fifth University. FU, that's what they used to say. Fifth University. 7 o'clock p.m., 1000 17th Avenue North. Be in the house. If you're not in the house, you ain't nowhere on Friday. Excuse my English. All right. Pastor Wallace, thank you all so much, and we'll be back Thursday night with our regular show, 2 hours there. Pastor Wallace, go ahead and wrap us up here, sir. We'll get ready, because the library is going to kick us out of here, man.
It's all right, brother. I think you've done a fine job, brother. You just keep on pushing.
I can
hear the power of teaching coming from you, through you, and you were saying to anyone, whosoever will, you would say, let them come. You train the kids. You want every parent to know that your child is very extraordinarily special. And that's a beautiful thing that you're doing. So I like to say that Matthew made it real plain in chapter 11, verse 29 says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. And learn
all
of
right.
me. That right there. You learn from him and get the knowledge, and that's what you're reaching out to do. Say, I got what it takes. I'm willing to teach you. Just keep doing what you're doing. I yield back to you.
All right. Well, we appreciate that. We appreciate that. And with that, Sister said change is going to come. It's come over me, Miss Hawkins, Tremaine Hawkins. We'll be back Thursday night for another episode. Join us.